Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Seriously, if you want to relieve stress, go to the Word of God.
Oh my goodness. It's just so weird, isn't it? Do people say stuff like that?
I apologize for it.
Are you kidding me?
Let's all do baptism, and I have a little pool here, and we'll all feel nice and relaxed. That's baptism. No, baptism is a sacred Christian rite. All the various yogas are sacred Hindu rites.
Wake up, America!
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Tell me what's the word, I wake up.
I was being sarcastic, which is another big word you'll learn in school.
What's the word on the street?
This is Wretched Radio. Today's special word is... fair. Are the new rules, the new morality that is being promoted by our increasingly secular culture, fair? After all, that is the battle cry. We want everything to be fair for everyone. And as a biblicist, I would agree with that. We do want it to be fair, but fair has its limits when it suddenly involves other commandments in the Bible. Do I want justice to be fair? Of course. Do we want court systems to be fair? Absolutely. Do we want hiring practices to be fair? Most definitely. Do we want opportunities to be fair? Perhaps. Do we want outcomes to be fair, meaning equal? And the answer to that is no. Why the hesitation on even opportunities being fair? Because of the doctrine of sovereignty. God puts different people in different places, different times, with different access to different opportunities, whether it's through relationships, it happens to be the zip code you're in, or a fortuitous event. God determines all of those details of our lives, and He does not appear to be especially concerned about equality of outcome or even opportunity. Why? Because He gives gifts as He sees fit. And there are some people that get a lot of stuff and other people who don't. And you simply don't see in the Bible lamenting about that. One's lot in life. Furthermore, in the New Testament, you see Paul calling for be content where you are. You don't have many opportunities? Be Christ-like. You don't have as much as somebody else does? Be ye content. But our world today seems to think that everything needs to be fair, but I would like to question whether their new definition of fair is indeed, you know, fair. Let me take you to the president addressing the joint session of Congress. He specifically expressed a desire to see federal lawmakers send the Equality Act to his desk, a bill he described as protecting LGBT Americans. Is the Equality Act fair if it stifles freedom of speech? Is it fair if it stifles freedom of thought? Is it fair if it stifles freedom of religion? Case in point, let me take you over the ocean to Finland. There is a representative there. She is in parliament, has been for a number of years, and she could be arrested and put in jail for 2 years for 3 criminal charges. What was her crime? She actually quoted Genesis. She stated that the Bible teaches male and female. That's the bedrock relationship for our culture. And now she's being brought up on charges. She said those things publicly in 2019, 2018, and 16 years ago. And for simply quoting a Bible verse, please note, for quoting a Bible verse, she could be arrested. You say, well, that's not fair. Well, I grant you, we're talking about a different country here. But that's what happens when you have a policy that says it has to be equal for some people at the exclusion of actually having a contrary thought. Did this woman incite violence against gay people? No, she did not. She simply expressed, I don't think that way of living is biblical. Let me take you to Great Britain. a pastor, 71 years old, who has been in ministry for over 30 years. He is a grandfather. He was preaching on Genesis 1, August 23rd in West London. For his troubles, he was identified as being homophobic, a hate speaker, and so they frog marched him, which apparently is the British way of saying they put him in handcuffs and marched him off. 71 years old. It was pretty aggressive to boot. Nevertheless, police said they had received complaints that a man had been making allegedly homophobic comments and arrested him under the Public Order Act, ooh, the dreaded POA, which can be used for abusive or insulting words. Insulting words. Well, then, that means I can't have a thought that differs with whatever the commonly accepted morality is. That is precisely what is being pushed with the Equality Act. It is a threat to freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and even freedom of thought. You can't have a differing opinion on this subject. It's funny that this seems to be the only issue where that rule seems to apply. In this country, well, at least historically, you could believe all kinds of wacky things as long as you didn't act on it. Not so with the LGBTQ issue. The Equality Act is anything but equal. It's not fair. And just one quote to remind you of how relieved we are that we have a man in the White House who doesn't tweet mean things. I'm so relieved about that. Quote from the President of the United States of America, a 78-year-old man who has grandchildren. All transgender Americans watching at home, especially young people, you'll recall during the campaign, it was okay if you're 8 years old, who are so brave, I want you to know your president has your back. Terrific. The Equality Act, not fair. Furthermore, he has determined there should be an American Families Plan. Oh, the word family, if we could just define it. To expand access to education, reduce the cost of child care, and support women in the workforce while providing upwards of $1.8 trillion in investments and tax credits for American families and children over 10 years. Well, that's not fair. We didn't get that. Did you get that? We didn't get that. You're not going to get that. If your kids aren't in that age, they're not going to get that. What is this? It is anything but fair. Arguing that 12 years of free public education was no longer sufficient as the U.S. seeks to compete on the world stage. Well, if it weren't such a awful racket that's going on between student loans and state-run universities and education systems that are funded by state-run programs, maybe the prices wouldn't be so nuts on university campuses. He explained that the American Families Plan guarantees 4 additional years of public education for every person in America. That's not fair. You have to pay for your 4 years of education if you did post-grad work or post-high school work? Did you pay for it? They're not going to have to. Not fair. Furthermore, the American Families Plan would guarantee low- and middle-income families will pay no more than 7% of their income for high-quality care for children up to the age of 5. That's not fair to the people who are of a different income level. It's anything but fair. The president went on to say the cost could fall on corporate America and the wealthiest 1% of Americans. I am neither corporate America nor one of the wealthiest 1% of Americans. That's not fair. It's not fair. Why? They claim this is about you got to pay your fair share. That's actually, by the way, exactly what the president said, that these corporations and wealthy people need to pay their fair share. What's fair about them having to pay more? Some would argue, well, they've got so much stuff, it's only fair that they pay more. No, you see, fair and more don't go together. And that is why in the Bible, when you read about tax rates, you do not see economic levels. When it came to the tithe, which was about 23 1/3 over the course of 3 years averaged out, it wasn't 23 1/3 for some, 13 1/3 for others, and 43 for the really rich people. You don't see that. Instead, in the Bible, what you see is actually fair. What's being promoted is anything but. The president asked Congress to support a, quote, comprehensive immigration bill that includes a pathway to citizenship for 11 million undocumented folks. That's not fair to the people who came here legally. I know a man, because I just met him recently with his wife, who actually got saved. He was here illegally. He got saved. Agreeing with his elders, he returned to his country, where he spent several years working to get back here to his wife. Why? Because he wanted to do things legally. Just letting everybody in isn't fair to those who played by the rules. What's the moral to this story? Well, it used to be that justice was blind, that there would be fair treatment. James warns about not treating rich a certain way or poor another way. That we do indeed have fair treatment, but we have other things like beliefs, morals and values, thoughts that we should be able to maintain if we so choose. What is being promoted right now is the absolute opposite of fair.
I was being sarcastic, which is another big word you'll learn in school.
What's the word on the street?
This is Wretched Radio. What does a young lady experiencing a crisis pregnancy sound like?
I was afraid. I was scared. I didn't know what to do. Everybody wanted me to have an abortion.
Everybody wanted her to have an abortion, but she visited a preborn life center, saw a free ultrasound of her baby.
I'm going to keep my baby, and I'm going to be a great mom.
80% of the time, a woman in crisis sees an image of her child via a free ultrasound at a preborn center, they choose life. How many lives could you save per month? The answer is double. During the month of May, Preborn has received a generous gift of matching grants. Every dollar you give to Preborn will be matched. So $28 for an ultrasound will now provide two ultrasounds. How many lives could you save? Visit preborn.org/wretched.
It's another day and another Wretched Radio. Hey, we're grateful and thankful for those of you who reach out to us with your wretched stories, with your questions, your comments, your conundrums, and yes, even your snarks. You can contact us in a couple of different ways. First, you can send us an email at idea@wretched.org, or you can leave us a voicemail on Beep Talk at 1-877-282-BEEP. Whichever way you decide to reach out to us, know that we are always looking forward to hearing from you. Like this recent email we received from Andrew, who says, I just wanted to share how helpful I found the Road Trip to Truth series to be. I'm a freshman in college and was able to talk my postmodern friend through the logical fallacies of postmodernism. Hey, thanks, Andrew. We love reading emails just like that. So send us those questions, those wretched stories, those comments, those conundrums, and again, even those snarks at idea@wretched.org, or leave us a voicemail at 1-877-282-BEEP. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
You say Edith in Romania, they say Edith.
Burdened by the hopelessness surrounding her, Edith prayed for a way to bring the gospel to Çakale. Since she started in 2008, she has discipled more than 100 children in this small village, and countless lives have been changed.
If you have never been to Romania, permit me to draw the picture. Think poor, forsaken, dead town in the middle of nowhere. That is where the Tomorrow Clubs thrive. Kids clubs bringing the gospel to small villages. The kids get saved. The parents get saved. The church gets revitalized. And this is happening all over Eastern Europe, courtesy of the Tomorrow Clubs and you. $30 a month, 30 disciples. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Clubs? TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Books of the Bible. Because God's people disobeyed, he sent them into exile. The book of Ezra tells us of Israel's return under Ezra's leadership and preaching, and how Israel underwent a period of intense reformation. When you experience divine chastisement, look to Ezra to see that God's discipline is meant for your restoration and reformation. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Just who exactly is on the wrong side of history here? This is Wretched Radio. Almost like the Pharisee card, almost like the Hitler card. You slap that one down and it's game over, buddy boy. Somebody disagrees with you about morality and values. You simply state, you're on the wrong side of history. Wah and la, you win. It is an argument that is nonsensical, frankly. It is loaded with chronological snobbery. We're right because it's us. We're the smartest people ever. And we have no understanding of history and context and how things, dare I say, evolve in a society. They change over time. There's different influences, different values, different political systems, different economies, a different level of civility. All of those things come to bear on a culture, but our current day right side of history experts, they don't allow for any of that. From the Federalist, an article titled, Why the Iconoclastic Left Are on the Wrong Side of History. These are the folks, they want to erase all of history from our culture. They want to get rid of all of it. And by the way, just as a little reminder, so much of this that is being driven by CRT will make its way into your church. Don't you panic. You let CRT into your church, and there will be iconoclasts who want to tear down your Protestant history. Guaranteed. Because that's how it works. It doesn't just apply in one realm and not the other. It applies in society, in government, in education, and it will apply in the church. Stephen Watts, history professor at the University of Missouri, helps us to understand history. And this is something I think you and I would do well to get a better grasp on. There are a lot of arguments that are being made for today that are based in the historical past. We need to learn how to understand what was going on back then. Now, that's always a tricky challenge because, of course, writing history, everybody brings baggage to it. They write it a certain way. They pick this. They leave out that. They don't give the full story, the innuendos, the zeitgeist. So much of history is, well, sketchy. And it's hard to really, really grasp, unless you do a really thorough study by a lot of different authors to get a slightly clearer picture. But that doesn't mean that we cannot understand that history, by its very definition, means it wasn't the same then as it is now. And if we don't help people understand that, you can plan on more of your culture's history being erased and more of your church's history being replaced, and you will start to see some bad ideas being imported into the church. Reparations, for one. Books are being written about that. What are they based on? History. Some letters here, a story there, and that means this is the way it needs to be today. Hold on. History has much to teach us. But we need to understand that there is much to history. That it isn't just, oh, that happened. Okay, that one thing. Now we take that and that's the way it was for everybody back then all the time. That's just not the way that history works. This is from, again, the Federalist. When not destroying history, awakened zealots try to manipulate it to ratify what they already believe. They go back to go, see that right back there? See, that's why it needs to be this. And a lot of it, by the way, is argument by anecdote. Nevertheless, the professor of history, who actually studies this for a career, Stephen Watts, said that there's some misguided principles in their approach. The awakened believe that the past is just like the present, and its inhabitants should be judged by contemporary standards. That's fallacious. That is not the way to read history. And if we don't start tagging this, they will march right over culture and the church. This is mistaken. Early on, the student of history learns to beware of presentism, or judging the past by the standards of the present. Presentism. Presentism. Repeat the word and remember it. Presentism. That it's the present. So presentism. I guess present would be to like put forth. Present, which is where the emphasis should be, is that the present, we're just everything. And this is the way it should have always been. No. No, it's not. And any good history prof teaches that right out of the gate. He writes, if not, you end up condemning Charlemagne for not endorsing women's rights. Or Susan B. Anthony for insensitivity to transgenderism. The Awakened believe that the past is a pantheon of heroes and villains to be lionized or condemned. Why? Because they don't understand presentism. The Awakened believe that the past unfolds according to conscious decisions and intent, and historical actors must be held to account. It's also fallacious. You make 1,000 decisions in the course of a day without really thinking them through. You go to work in the morning and then you come home later in the day. Unless, of course, you've got one of those shifts, it's an overnight shift. That's kind of the pattern and the standard for our culture. The warp and woof drives a lot of what we do. We have stores that carry this. We've got parking lots that look like that. We've got an education system that we basically accept as the standard. And you just go along with it. What if they discover 200 years from now, when they're on the right side of history and we're the knuckleheads? Oh, it turns out educating kids for 12 years, that's the worst thing you can do. You should do 8 intense years. That's better. Therefore, everybody who lived in 2021 are a bunch of idiots. Well, no, you just go along with it. And the same thing is true when we read history. Even the novice student of history quickly sees that historical evolution often produced unintended consequences. Consider Lyndon Johnson's Great Society. Good idea. Seemed like he was on the right side of history. The devastation of the welfare state, the dependency that it has promoted, the debt that it has caused. It was well intended. And do you think somebody at that time, where they were like, hey, I know what we're going to do. We're going to get this thing to become a big, monstrous mess that'll consume the budget and cripple America. Probably not. Well-intentioned people that were living in their time, making the best decisions that they could. The Awakened believe that past morality is that the past is a morality tale to be ransacked for lessons illustrating good and evil. Yet even a cursory look at past events discloses a world of motivations, often conflicting or ambiguous, at work in shaping outcomes. Henry Ford's adoption of the assembly line in 1911. Here's a good example. Reshape the modern world. Combined idealism, you lower the cost of an automobile so that average people can have one. Interest, well, they could make money doing it, provide jobs. And unforeseen developments, like overly repetitious labor workers often resented or rejected. Do you think that's why he built that system? Hey, this is going to make people nuts working on the assembly line. They're going to become bored and out of their minds. No. It's not what they intended. They were making decisions in their time based on what they understood. The Awakened, however, believe that an overwhelming theory, which is class conflict or modernization not long ago, whiteness, patriarchy, heteronormativity, intersectionality, offers a tidy explanation for everything. And that is why CRT is a helpful analytical tool. We can't get the world without CRT, which is an unbiblical framework. This is an error. The incredible complexity of human history demands multi-causal explanations and vigorous debate among competing interpretations. Not a conga line of liberationist theories sent sneaking through the past, shimmying and shaking to the rhythm of revolution. We have a challenge in front of us. History is being cited selectively to promote a modern-day agenda. As Americans, from our article, search our national heritage for help in solving modern problems, we should embrace humility, not hubris. being on the right side of history, as the Awakened say, doesn't mean being in the left side of history. It means realizing our past, like our present, is imperfect, approaching it with condescending arrogance, as the woke movement tends to do, merely highlights the smallness of the examiners. We have a task in front of us, and it demands thoughtful examination and nuanced judgments, not a frenzied kangaroo court convened by wokesters jacked up on ideological amphetamines and spouting slogans. And so it is. You are going to run into this. In history class? No. In your church, as proponents of our current social justice movement seek to apply CRT, they will become iconoclasts, erasing everyone who does not somehow manage to live up to our modern-day standards imposed on people from the past. As Christians, we need to be better historians. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I'm Jimmy Hicks. Well, on Saturday, voters in Lubbock, Texas, backed a sanctuary city for the unborn ordinance that will try to outlaw abortions. Opponents say it's an unconstitutional ban on the procedure, and lawsuits are surely coming. The vote, however, wasn't even close. Unofficially, 62% of voters were for the ordinance, which comes less than a year after Planned Parenthood opened a clinic in Lubbock. The passage makes Lubbock one of two dozen cities that have declared themselves a sanctuary city for the unborn. Josh Duggar, most notably known as a member of the famed Duggar family from 19 Kids and Counting, has pled not guilty to charges of possession of child pornography last Friday. Following his arrest by FBI agents, a hearing was virtually held in Arkansas. Duggar is being accused of possessing material depicting the sexual abuse of children under the age of 12. If he's convicted, the father of six faces up to 20 years in prison and fines up to $250,000 on each count. Disgusting. Muslims in Uganda are suspected of poisoning a Christian pastor who planned to build a church on land they wanted to buy. The poisoning happened in early April after the pastor declined to sell a five-acre lot to the group who wanted to build a school and mosque. The pastor was a father to eight children ages 2 to 16. The man suspected of the poisoning admitted to his role and has since been arrested. The three pro-life organizations received $85,000 in grants last week at the 6th Annual National Prayer Luncheon for Life. The event was designed to bring pro-lifers together across America to pray for and honor high-impact pro-life groups. And look, while this news is undoubtedly good, I just can't help but think about how $85,000 pales in comparison to the some $400 billion in funding our president has made available to groups murdering babies in just his first 100 days in office. Look, if you're not already doing so, please commit yourself to praying for all those who are fighting on the front lines daily for the unborn. And finally, today, a church in Illinois has come under fire, rightfully so, for recently considering hiring an openly gay man who is also a drag queen to serve as their pastor. Last week, Al Mohler called the consideration of Hope United Methodist Church a doctrinal annihilation. He also condemned the church's promotion of the man as, quote, intentional refutation and revolt against the very order of creation that God has provided. Ken Ham has also come out and commented on an interview with the man that aired on CBS News, saying, quote, this is a form of paganism and has nothing to do with Christianity. But this is absolutely the beginning of what we can expect to see once the Methodist denomination split officially takes place. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Names of God. Is Jesus God? One name given to God in Scripture is El Gibor, the Mighty God. One occurrence of this name stands out. In Isaiah chapter 9, El Gibor is the name given to the promised Messiah. Jesus is that promised Messiah. He is God incarnate. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
As the world turns insane.
The idea that an 8-year-old child or a 10-year-old child decides, you know, I decided I want to be transgender. That's what I think I'd like to be. It may make my life a lot easier.
This is Wretched Radio. If we fail to remember Romans 1, we're going to go bonkers too. Why? Because we are living in a world increasingly detached from God, and that inevitably means when you are separated from your source, from your maker, the one who has designed you, programmed you, and you run on your own operating system, you're going to crash. Simple as that. And we are seeing people dressed up, standing in the halls of power, behaving like, well, the Bible's word would be fools. They have zero wisdom regarding the way the world operates. And remember, the world operates on more laws than just scientific laws that we've discovered. Has God put those laws into place, better yet, rather than calling them laws, has he putting those principles, those things into effect? Why? Because they're not laws, because he can violate them anytime that he wants to. And the word law implies that if God breaks the law, he's a lawbreaker. No, the one who writes the laws, he can change them, do whatever he wants to. The word law isn't the best. Nevertheless, God has put certain things in place to keep the place running. There's gravity. There's the rotation of the earth. There are solar systems that move a certain way for the sake, if nothing else, of telling time and knowing the seasons. Whatever the scientific principle is, or law, if you like, God wrote it to run the place, but there are more. There are laws of morality. There are laws of systems. There are laws of values. And not to be confused that just because if the world happens to stumble like a blind knife inside of the squirrel twice a day in the shed, get something right twice a day, it doesn't mean that they're godly or Christian. It just means that the light of their image bearing isn't totally snuffed out. And so when the government or when our society makes a decision that is more in alignment with God, things will generally go better. When they make a decision that are against God's laws and God's principles, they basically go worser. Why? Because God has set up these laws and established them. He set up boundaries for how we're supposed to behave that apply just like the laws of nature. There's laws of running the place, family. If somebody redefines family, there's going to be a problem. Has to be. We have a tendency, I've noticed as evangelicals over the year, to kind of get this backwards. We say that, hey, y'all, if you behave like this, if you define things like that, you know, it's not the best. It could go wrong. No. It has to go wrong. It has to. Because you can't long run wrongly and continue to operate. And so it is. We are living in a world jettisoning virtually everything. When you're jettisoning sexuality, identification of genders, is there anything more scientific than that? The scientist people, meaning scientism people, they should bow to that, shouldn't they? But they don't. Why? Because their desire for sin supersedes common sense. Their desire for sin supersedes any sense of what is good or just. That's why you're seeing so many decisions right now in the halls of Congress this is all bad for people. Everything is just bad for people. Why do you keep doing that? Because it promotes an ideology that ultimately allows for less shackles by God, casting off his authority and living any way that they want to. And this, by the way, comes out in subtle ways. Okay, perhaps I'm sneaking this in just because it happens to be a subject of interest to me. Architecture. Did you know that our last president, whose name we dare not speak, he actually signed a presidential, what are those, the presidential, it's not a law.
Executive order.
That's the one right there. He signed into order that the government buildings that are now going to be erected should be beautiful. They should hearken back to classical architecture. And I believe it was an article in American Thinker that I was reading about the architecture in Budapest. There were three cities, Buda, pest and like a Buddha or something like that. And the three of them were combined once they grew and kind of just melded into one another into the great city of Budapest, which was glorious prior to World War II. Got hammered in World War II. Much of the grand architecture, the classic Greek and Roman architecture, was destroyed. The communists, they didn't care much about those things. That's interesting. Remember now, a godless society doesn't care about, or a godless system doesn't care about beauty and architecture. Why? Because architecture speaks, it says something, and the communists built, if anything, the only word that I think best summarizes it is it's just entirely utilitarian. Is it good looking? No. Visit any foreign Eastern European nation, any of them, and you take a look at the housing for people. Hey, no beauty, no design, nothing clever, nothing ornate. Why? Because it says this building just exists for you as a cog to do your job. That's what this building is for. And so it turns out, in I believe 2010, the new Hungarian president decided, no, we're going to harken back to our old architecture. We're going to start rebuilding structures that are gorgeous. And they did. Why? It was a way of saying the communist message through their architecture is not what we believe in. We believe in our past. We believe in Western civilization. We believe in having some traditions. And so it is. Our current president has decided, nope, we just want things to be designed without beauty. Why? Because it's his worldview shining through. It's a godless worldview. It shows up everywhere. And we're seeing that every place, all around the world, aren't we? With just about every single one of these news stories, that if you sat down and consumed a box of crack, which I'm pretty certain is how you consume crack these days. I'm not sure. You consume a box. They're like chocolates, apparently. I have no idea what I'm talking about. But you could do some sort of hallucinogenic and write down, okay, here's a headline. Tomorrow it will be true. New scene from Disneyland's Snow White ride is prompting backlash. There's a San Francisco newspaper that objects to the prince giving a smooch to Snow White because she didn't give consent. A kiss he gives to her without her consent while she's asleep, which cannot possibly be true love if only one person knows it's happening. Well, what's happened here? When was this movie, this story written? 80 years ago? Never crossed anybody's mind. Why now? New morality, new values, casting off of God, and they're writing their rules, and morality looks like this. This is going on everywhere. And in some places, it's more aggressive than in other places. For instance, you've got Connecticut. Don't know if you're familiar with that state with the C right in the middle of it that never gets pronounced. They are doing away with their religious vaccine exemptions. No longer allow a religious exemption from childhood immunization requirements for schools, colleges, and daycare facilities, becoming the sixth state to end that policy. What is that? Anti-God thinking being applied. It's the foolishness of the world. China shuts down Bible app. Christian WeChat as their new policies to crack down on Christianity go into effect. What is that? A more overt warring against God and his standards. Everything that we are seeing these days is Romans 1. And if we fail to remember that, we're going to get really ugly. There was an arrest in Canada. Perhaps you remember the fellow, the Polish pastor, Arthur Pawlowski. He didn't want the authorities coming into his church during Easter service, and so he told them, stay out. They came back with a warrant, and he said, get out. Guess what? The Court of Queen's Bench Justice David Gates has given police the green light to use such reasonable force as they deem appropriate to gain access. The order states that if the pastor or anyone else interferes with that order, law enforcement can do anything necessary to arrest him. By the way, he grew up behind the Iron Curtain in Poland. He's kind of seen these things before. Now, how he handled it, that's a debate for a different day. maybe you've heard the videos and went, that's not the point. The point is a Canadian pastor being put in jail because he does not want to adhere to what he believes are not fair standards regarding the COVID business. Sounds a lot like James Coates up at Grace Life Church in Edmonton. Increasingly, as the world's light grows dim, further away from God, not applying anything biblical, it's going to get wackier and wackier. And don't forget, there's only one solution for this. Thinking doesn't get improved by helping them with their thinking. Salvation first, then their thinking gets fixed. So if we're kind of going nuts about a bonkers world that we're living in, we have got one solution, period. The gospel. This is Wretched Radio. Yes, you want to save money because after all, you're a Christian and that's what we want to do, save money, but never at the expense of our family's health and peace of mind should a family member fall ill. That is why I'd like to commend you MediShare, the gold standard of healthcare sharing. You will save on average $500 per month as a family. How much will you save? It takes 2 minutes. 844-34-BIBLE. And if you think this isn't very good, you get free telehealth services with MediShare, a huge network of doctors with MediShare, and great customer support. And fellow Christians will pray for you. MediShare, 400,000 members strong. Peace of mind and savings. Simply call 844-34-BIBLE, 844-34-BIBLE.
Well, after a year of social distancing and shutdowns and stay-at-home orders, it looks like finally maybe we might be seeing some light at the end of the tunnel. But one thing we've been extremely grateful for here at Wretched is the support of all of our gospel partners. Not only have we been able to maintain producing the same amount of content, we've actually produced even more. Our flagship programs, Wretched Radio and Wretched TV, have never missed a single episode, and we've been fortunate enough to produce new programming like Road Trip to Truth Season 2, the upcoming Wretched Worldview with Dr. Owen Strand, the latest addition to the Drive-By audio series, Drive-By Biblical Counseling 3, a new line of Bible study and homeschool curriculum, plus a brand new Biblical Counseling TV series currently in development. And none of this would have ever been possible without the support of our gospel partners. So would you please prayerfully consider joining our mission of reaching millions of people all over the world with the gospel? Just visit wretched.org/donate or text the word wretched to the number 44321.
So, you're one of them there Christians that wants a lot of bang for your giving buck. I concur completely, and that is why I would like to commend to you the Masters Academy International. If you would like to see your giving go a long way, the Masters Academy is the vehicle that will make sure your dollar goes very, very far. They train indigenous pastors in 16 countries around the globe to rightly pastor and to rightly preach the Word of God for years, for decades. Consider the fruit that will be born from training a pastor to rightly divide the Word of truth. If you would like to get a lot of bang for your giving buck, please learn more about the Masters Academy International. Pick a country that's near and dear to your heart and give with confidence. Wretched.org/pastor.
Important dates in Christian history. 529 AD. Benedict of Nursia establishes his monastic order outside of Rome. His written code of conduct, called the Benedictine Rule, becomes the most influential guide for centuries of monasticism in the West. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Primary or secondary issue? That is the question. This is Wretched Radio. The role of women in the church, a contentious subject indeed. Debate as of late whether or not it rises to the level of essential, primary, or secondary, or tertiary, or quadrary, way out there. It's just not a big deal at all. Michelle Leslie, reprinting an article she printed a number of years ago, I think she was kind of running a best of, and it is indeed an excellent help. in understanding where the role of women in the church rises in the level of Christian orthodoxy. Specifically, the role of women as a pastor. Now, we're not going to talk about the other roles, teaching the dynamics, mixed classes, being the organist, leading the choir. Not talking about those. Let's just talk about the role of women as pastor. How would you make the case that what the reformers, I think, would say, that if a woman was leading a church as the pastor slash elder, it's not a church? It doesn't even qualify as such because they are so off on this issue. If you were going to join the side of the reformers, how would you make the case? How would you say, yeah, this rises to an essential issue? Now, recently, there's been a fair amount of talk about this subject, courtesy of Beth Moore, who has accused those of us who are complementarians, that we are raising the level of the role of women as a pastor, preacher in a church, to how they view the Bible. And the comment that concerned her the most was when people would say, you show me about a woman being a pastor in a church, what a church believes about that, and I'll tell you their view of the Bible. Well, that's, I think, actually a valid point. I would actually say that's very true. And you can pick that about any subject. Pick any subject that you care to concern yourself with. Pick a sin from the commandments. It says, thou shalt honor thy father and mother. Well, not exactly sure what. It's kind of fuzzy. Maybe, you know, as Moses was progressing, the trajectory of Scripture was headed toward dishonoring parents. It's a little tricky. I'm not sure where we stand on murder. Because, you know, the thou shalt not murder thing, it was just written at a different time. You'd go, hold on, what are you doing to the Bible there? And I think the same thing is true with Paul's very clear statement in 1 Timothy 2:12. I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man. Rather, she is to remain quiet. Now, does that mean she never talks in church? No, it means not to be disorderly. And that there is simply a structure that God has put in place so that we don't have the current confusion that we are seeing inside of the body. A big push these days coming from a lot of female Bible teachers that are very popular. Some use the Bible even less than others. But the point is, there's a push for this. And this has always been the camel's nose under the tent. Michelle Leslie goes beyond just, you show me your view about the role of women and I'll tell you about your view toward the Bible, to making a distinction that I think is very helpful. Listen to the verse again. I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man. What is that? What type of a sentence is that? Well, it's clearly a statement of fact, but it is also a command. Even though Paul doesn't say, don't do this, what he's saying, I don't permit it, and you shouldn't either. It's assumed in this. In other words, what Paul is issuing is not a theological treatise per se. He's delivering a command. It's a prohibition. It's a command against a certain behavior. Now, of course, beliefs are a part of it, but this is an actual action. This isn't like, for instance, being in a church where you disagree with somebody on a secondary issue, but you get along because you're not living in sin. You just hold on to a different theological view based on verses that you think point in that direction. But it's not somebody living in unrepentant sin. And understanding that Paul is giving a command about behavior, something that God prohibits, when somebody, therefore, goes against what God prohibits, they're sinning. Unrepentant sinning. Michelle Leslie, all of the tenets in the three levels of doctrine are affirmative statements regarding beliefs. You must believe in the resurrection. You must believe in the essential doctrines, the solas. You got to have those things down. But then there's secondary levels. Let's just say gifts. Then there's the third level, which would be whether public or private school, homeschool. that might even be a fourth issue, but you get the point. There's levels of it. They're doctrinal statements. They're belief statements. And those need to be adhered to. When it gets to a secondary issue, we can have a difference because they're not violating a prohibition. There can be multiple views on secondary or tertiary issues that can all be considered biblical, but there can only be one view of sin that is biblical. Differing beliefs on true secondary and tertiary issues are not sin. Violating a prohibition is. More from Leslie. If someone behaves differently from God's command about lying, she's sinning. If a woman believes differently from God's command in 1 Timothy 2:12, she's sinning. That maybe brings up a perspective that might in one way tenderize our hearts on the issue. Please note, I did not say that we suddenly change our position on it. No, just the opposite. This affirms our belief on what Paul clearly wrote in 1 Timothy 2:12. But when I realize, though, a woman and a church are sinning, now I'm concerned. I'm not just agitated because they've got this thing wrong and it's so obvious. And this is how all the liberal churches go down the tubes. While there's all of those things, I should be concerned. They're sinning, and that is actually a bigger deal. From Leslie, differing beliefs on secondary and tertiary issues are not born of disobedience and rebellion toward God. Usually it's the opposite. When someone has studied a theological issue enough to hold a particular position on it, it's usually because she's striving to please God and to be biblical in her beliefs. Differing behavior on issues of sin is born out of disobedience and rebellion toward God. That would mean that if a church is being led by a woman as the pastor, that entire body is in unrepentant sin, ongoing state of sin. What would you say about an assembly like that? You would have to conclude if there's no willingness for repentance, it's not a church. Not because of its low view of the Bible, which likely exists, but because it's unrepentant sin on something that's so clear. I just don't know how this could be any more clear. What did Paul need to say? How is it that we sneak any other ideas into a statement like, I don't permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man? Well, you got Phoebe. Oh, well, yeah, okay. We got to work through that. But that doesn't undermine or somehow broaden a clear prohibition. One last quote from Michelle Leslie. Because different beliefs on secondary and tertiary issues are not born of rebellion and are not sin, they do not require church discipline. Sin does. If someone in your church is openly dishonoring her parents, she's sinning and should be subject to church discipline. If a woman is pursuing a career as a pastor, Michelle Leslie writes, she is sinning and should be subject to church discipline. That was helpful, wasn't it? And might I also add, she didn't bury the lead, which I so appreciate these days. She actually got right to it, stuck with it, and makes a persuasive case that God has determined this is how I want the place to run because I want it run orderly. And if I don't set some of these rules on these things, it's going to be chaos. And isn't that what we're seeing, by the way, in so many mainline Protestant denominations? Absolute and utter chaos. And while I realize that this particular theology, because it is also that, it's not just a behavior, it is a theology, I understand in our current culture that screams that this is Neanderthalic. That's right, Neanderthalic. This is just knuckle-dragon nonsense. We're 21st century Helen-ready women. Roar. We need to remember that our beneficent maker, our benevolent king, does the right thing when he writes laws. And this is good for human flourishing. And even though the world will speak to the flesh and say, nope, no, it's not. When we follow God's laws of the universe, not just gravity, not just entropy, but the laws of how to live, inevitably we will flourish and we will be happier. Thank you, Michelle Leslie. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.